Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by two esteemed colleagues from our CERT team, Matt and Dustin. Matt, could you introduce yourself and your role within our CERT?
Yes. Hi, Matt Grieco. I'm a CERT analyst, and we work on incident response cases and mostly work in digital forensics.
Perfect. And Dustin?
Dustin Cox, also a CERT. Exactly what Matt said.
So today we're going to dive into the operation of a modern cyber incident response team. And no two better team members here to work us through this process. And, you know, Matt, I'm trying to think of what a typical day looks like for a CERT analyst, or is that the oxymoron? There is no typical day. Every day is different. But any thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on that. No two days are really the same. You know, I think for any IR CERT analyst, right, it's going to depend on who you're serving. So if you're working internal to your organization, incident response, that's going to look a bit different. You know, here at CIS, we work with our state and local partners, and, you know, so they run into all sorts of different issues, and their threat landscape is a bit different, say, than what a bank might see, or, you know, and anything else in the private sector. So for us, right, it's really what the membership is reporting into us is what we respond to. So there's, you know, in the IR, you kind of get a sense of like what's normal in your environment. So you can kind of tune things and weed things out. But because our members are so different and their network architecture is different, their security stacks are all different. Every case, you know, for the most part, looks different. There are certainly like similar trends that we could see across the membership of, you know, people are reporting X ransomware infections or InfoStealer infections. So there's larger scale trends, but the way we respond, I shouldn't say the way we respond, but what we respond to is different on the day to day, because it kind of evolves with the threat landscape of what's affecting us LTT. But for us generally, right, it's we work a lot with our security operations center, who's, you know, the focal point for receiving reports from the membership, and our SOC will walk our members through a triaging process, kind of assessing the nature of the incident. And then if it meets criteria for us, we'll get involved. And then, you know, so from our perspective, from a day-to-day, there's interfacing with our state and local partners who need our assistance. So walking through the nature of the incident, seeing what their security stack looks like, what sort of configurations they have in place, things like that. You know, because as cases are coming in, we need to triage and then resource them effectively. And then simultaneously, right, we work our cases in a queue. So we'll have more than one case open at the same time across the team. And, you know, so while we're also onboarding new cases, we're also working current caseloads. So, you know, there's plenty of analysis and forensics being done from a day to day. And, you know, cases are pretty dynamic. So, you know, if we're working a case, right, it's not necessarily point A to Z and it's a straight line, right? We might be going back and forth with the partner a whole bunch and trying to get clarification, or they're providing us different evidence. So the cases are kind of curvy lines. So, you know, we're dealing with that a lot too. But yeah, it's It's never a dull moment with us.
That's awesome. Good. Well, you know, I often think that the cert analyst has one of the hardest jobs in InfoSec, because it's not only one trying to think as an attacker would and how certain elements are developed and where they exist in terms of evidence, but then there's the constant flow of new technology, updates to that technology, changing the placement, adding new capability and function. All of this you have to keep up with, and an evolving threat landscape. So, Dustin, how do you keep up both with the threat landscape and the evolution of digital forensics with technologies now distributed, and how do you and your team adapt to that?
Sure. So things are constantly changing. No two cases are ever alike. As long as I've been on cert, you know, you can have the same ransomware case, but the behavior is going to be completely different. That being said, there's a lot that at its core remains the same. It was a phishing email. The VPN was not configured. We were not patching. A lot of these core fundamentals are remaining as root causes for these cases, whereas the underlying technology that then is abused once they get in might improve or change, and we need to adapt on the spot. There's a lot of on-the-fly, me and Matt learning behaviors, reading white papers, day of case. That's just the way it goes. So we're constantly learning, and it helps that we're all lifelong learners on the team, really. And then we've also recently changed the way we approach cases a little bit. So we all tackle a case as a team. It's no longer a situation of new case comes in, it's assigned to Dustin. A new case comes in, it is assigned to cert. That means there's more eyes on all of the data. We can pivot off of each other, and usually we end up with better work and faster work.
Yeah, definitely. Well, triaging together, I think, is a lot more effective than trying to go it alone, as it were, especially with the caseload. And that helps then distribute, I think, some of, identification. Oh, I just saw this in another case. So there's information sharing, obviously, shared resourcing in that space. And then it's tactics and techniques. And so, Matt, I wonder what tools and technologies you guys are using. Do you have any personal favorites? Anyone's, thank God this exists, because without it, we would be having to code this ourselves. Anything along those lines?
Yeah. We have a lot of those. So for us, you know, we're all, not all, but we're primarily open source tooling, free to use tooling. So we heavily rely on the CAPE tooling for our collection. It used to be way back in the day, which is, you know, not that long ago, but it used to be that we would receive physical media. The partners would mail us drives. We would take images locally, but obviously with, the shift to more remote work, we've kind of shifted around how we have done collections. So CAPE has been a big part of that, where it collects forensic, what's the word I'm looking for? It collects what we're looking for on a machine. The partner just downloads it. They'll go ahead and run it, and it generates a nice output, and they'll upload it to us. And then we get forensic artifacts. That was the word I was looking for. And we get our artifacts that we're looking to analyze. So the CAPE tooling is really huge for us. It's pretty lightweight. It's relatively quick to run for them. So, you know, we're not waiting 3 or 4 days to receive something in the mail, right? We can, in theory, get something within a few hours, especially when we're talking about critical cases like ransomware cases, things like that, where time is of the essence. So that's definitely one. For us, we're really, shout out to Eric Zimmerman. The Eric Zimmerman toolkit is a daily driver for us. We really would not be able to effectively do our jobs without it. It provides a lot of convenient tooling for forensic analysts, where, you know, if you were trying to do something natively in a Windows operating system is going to take you a bit of time and a bit of deciphering. And, you know, he's really done a lot of work for the community to offload that into his tooling and makes our jobs a lot easier. Let's see what else. We also have a couple of forensic tools, like more commercial tools. So if the case is a little more involved, I will use Magnet Axiom, which is kind of a full-fledged, fully equipped tooling, if you will, of, you know, you're able to pop in a disk image and it can categorize things for you. It can point out things that might be of interest for a forensic investigation. So we rely on that as well. Python is big, at least for me. I come from a coding background-ish, and being able to kind of automate our way through certain things and cases is definitely useful. Using things like grep as well, using our standard, tried and true tooling from that perspective. I don't know, Dustin, did I miss anything? What else do we do? We do a lot. We use a lot of stuff.
We do. And it also depends on the analyst a little bit. We've had people on the team who absolutely love more commercial products and really lean on those to get the job done. We have freaks like me who just want to use Eric Zimmerman tools for everything, right? Or I just want to look at a spreadsheet for everything. I refuse to do it the easy way for some reason. And we've also made the custom tooling that we pipe in to CAPE, which has come in really handy once in a while. And we say this in our partner scope calls, we try to be tool agnostic. We're just going to do what we need to do to get the job done, however best we think we can approach the situation.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's that adaptive nature, right? It's trying to meet the problem where it is and build toward ultimately the solution. Again, Eric Zimmerman, absolutely brilliant. The work that he's done through Sans and Crawl and all of the work he's done in the past, 10, 15 years, I think he's been providing these types of capabilities, which, like I say, thank goodness those exist. And then the other element, I think in this space is you do, I sometimes find, and with me, I've worked in Encase before and the Access Data, I think they actually changed companies now, but the toolkit in that space, I find myself leaning toward. But then when I did, myself and Lou Smith, who's another member of the team, we were working on battlefield forensics through SANS. And that was just, fell in love with some of the Eric Zimmerman tools. Just like, if I knew this existed 2 years ago, I'd be doing things a lot differently. But now, adapting a capability.
Absolutely. Excellent. Yeah. Yep. Well, and like the capability, if you know what indicator you're looking for, a situation like the Eric Zimmerman tool set's perfect because you can just kind of spear straight at that artifact. Whereas if you need to take a more broad approach, that's when there's a really heavy argument for something like Axiom or FTK, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think that's also, it's indicative of the CERT mindset, I think. And again, you correct me where I'm wrong, but it seems to me it's a kind of a red teamer, investigator, and then triager all kind of working at the same time to really effectively assess a problem. And I think where as you'd mentioned, the team-based approach comes in so effectively because some are, potentially more adversarial thinking, oh, well, what was the ingestion vector? There's where we can find some artifacts that will help us then determine, was it successful? How long was it running? Blah, blah, blah. And then others are, if we check these registry keys, let's take a look at some of the hives here and see what we can find and break those down. And I think that team effort, and really just a lot of respect to the CERT team, because it is a super cohesive and well-functioning team. I mean, it's the Swiss clock, really, of any organization that I've seen in order the effectiveness and the triage capability. Because One of the things that I wanted to talk about here was prioritizing alerts and distinguishing between false positives and real threats, but also getting into the velocity in which you see cases, get them into the queue, triage, manage, report, we're on to the next. And just the flow is absolutely incredible. So Matt, what do you put that down to? Is that just you guys are rock stars, or is it it's a team?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. No, that's a question over. I think you were just talking about before the question, right? So for us, like, we are complementary in our skill sets. And so I know that one thing our manager, Rob Reese, would definitely say is we all have a unified care for what we do and who we're doing it for. So that's the number one thing for our team is, right, like, we're here to serve the state and local governments. And so that definitely drives us through a lot in our casework. But I think also importantly, like, our backgrounds are all different, right? Like, Dustin comes from, like, a more sysadmin background. Like I say, like, I have some, like, engineering-ish background, coding background. And so, like, at different points in a case, if I was working something by myself, Dustin has in the trenches sysadmin knowledge, right? Where, like, I might be running to a wall. He's like, oh, dude, like, when I was, sysadmin, like, I was, like, we did this, so maybe look here. And then, but if we're working stuff by ourselves, like, that, it just, that stuff isn't as apparent. And so, like, I think for us, it's really, like, we know, us as individuals, like, we know what our strengths are. And we lean on our fellow teammates to be like, hey, like, here's what I'm contributing. And also, like, when we're working cases, right, we do have, like, what I'll call, like, our own methodology of how we're assigning out particular artifacts, what to look for. And it all does kind of depend on the type of case, right? So if we're looking at, like, a account compromise, we're not going to use the same, what you might call, like, runbook for ransomware. But, the way that we kind of go about cases, right, where we're all coming in with different skills, but we're using kind of a unified methodology, if that makes sense, where it's like, we'll look at different types of artifacts or try to prove the existence of certain artifacts or prove certain activity occurred in their general categories like execution or file access, things like that. So we'll approach the, it's not kind of like the Wild West where it's like, all right, I'm just going to sit here and scroll through a CSV for the next 6 hours, right? It's more like, well, we're looking for specific things to prove certain things, and it's all going to be dependent on the case. So, we lean into our previous backgrounds of skills, but we also lean into each other's skill set. So did I miss anything, Dustin?
No, you did great.
Yeah, smash that one. I'll give you that one. That was awesome. Nice. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back to talk to Matt and Dustin. Think your cybersecurity is reasonable? A fancy lock on the server room door just won't cut it.
No, it won't, Sean. Fortunately, CIS Secure Suite comes with tools and resources for building a truly reasonable cyber defense program.
And you can test it too. Membership helps you evaluate how solid your defenses are using risk quantification.
That's key for complying with U.S. state data privacy laws and proven you've taken the right steps if a breach occurs.
Now through November 19th, save on a new membership with a multi-year discount.
Want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/CIS-Secure Suite.
Okay, we're back. So Dustin, Matt's laid out just the perfect answer about how you all lean on one another. It's background. It's the skills that you're bringing to the table. When you're thinking about this from the incident response lifecycle perspective, does that reflect on where you will have certain team members focus, or is it more advice? So from a detection perspective, we'll work through, you know, this is the person on the team that has the greatest strength there, all the way down through, you know, potentially reverse engineering, potentially just triaging, where's my registry, you know, expert, those types of things. How does it work within the team? Or is it, we'll just reach out, every case is our own, but we've got the team support to manage and triage certain cases?
Team throughout the whole experience. So starts from escalation from our wonderful SOC. First time you talk to us, you're going to be in a scoping call, and likely all of us are going to be in that call with you if we're all available. From that point, we will start analysis, collect data, and we divvy up, as Matt referenced earlier, how we see the case going or who's good at what, who hasn't had a chance to, I don't know, touch shim cash in a while, throw him a bone, you know. But no, everything is as a team. And to Matt's point earlier, there's been plenty of times where, you know, Matt will throw something up like a script, and then he'll find a payload in there, and then I can take that, hit the MFT, and then all of a sudden we start to have a story going on when 10 minutes prior we had nothing and nothing to go off of. So the group dynamic of that is at the forefront of how we accomplish our goal and our mission. As far as response lifecycle, CERT at its core, being DFIR, we would really sit kind of in that scope containment area of the life cycle, and there's going to be a lot of back and forth there. We're not going to leave and go to other parts of that circle quite yet. We're going to need to hang out and scope, report, contain on the partner end, come back, we scope more, and we keep going until we feel really confident that we have a whole story or the best story that we can. That's not to say that CERT does not play a role in other parts of the life cycle. We can do lessons learned meetings with partners should they request it. We can help with suggestions for containment and recovery. It all just depends on the case and what the partner would like us to provide.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important because it's part of the larger incident response cycle is the capabilities that you all have from a CERT perspective to contribute in those spaces. It's not just, you know, that this is the one thing that we do. We drop a report and walk away. It's consistent support. And I think it's that mission-driven approach that we've always had. And I know Rob Reese enforces and really believes in for the team. Is it's so important. Because I think to me, you know, respectfully as, you know, internally I utilize, you know, the CERT capability if we have anything to triage. And it's just the consistency, the professionalism, and the capability you demonstrate across many different layers of the incident response cycle. And I just see that as value add for anybody wanting to work or needing to work with the CERT. Because you're, in a lot of cases, you're meeting people on probably one of the worst days in their professional experience, and it's enabled to walk through them with, you know, with that added pressure, as it were, and then, you know, bringing them through the life cycle as a partner in some cases, I think is so important. Matt, does that resonate?
Yeah, it does. I mean, no, you hit it on the head, right? Where, you know, for us, sometimes it's just another day, another case, but for our membership and our partners, like, it's, you know, sometimes it's a matter of life and death. You know, if a police department or hospital, what have you, you know, it can affect those things. And so for us, like, our number one thing, and you know, I think a lot, and you mentioned it too, right, where a lot of it's possible that you contract out your incident response services and they get you an answer within X amount of time. And then that's kind of, they're like, all right, I'm, you know, good luck. You know, we don't really have that, right? For us, what we look for is, as best we can find it based on what's available, is the root cause. And guiding our partner to a point where they feel comfortable enough, confident enough to move forward in remediating the incident. And so, yeah, like mission driven for us, right, is like we, you know, not saying that commercial sector isn't important because it absolutely is, but for us on the SLTT side, right, that's just, it's a different, I think the impact can be different. So for us, making sure that we're leaving them, our partners, in a good spot where they have recommendations from us going forward or actions to take, or they have an idea of how this all started, like that's really critical for us. And every case we work, like that's, we definitely try to do that first and foremost. Our objective is like, hey, are we putting you guys in a good spot to move forward? And like I said before, like all of us, you know, the mission really resonates with us and our team, and we're definitely driven by that when we're working cases. So
fantastic. Now, is there, Dustin, an example of a case that you've worked recently, sanitized, of course, that you could share just to highlight how the team handled it and some of the interactions that you had as a CERT? Any cases pop to mind that would be a good example?
Me and Matt talked about this on the off chance you bring it up, and we both together very recently worked a case that started from an internal OCR, actually, and then came from an OCR to SOC and then over to us. The OCR detailed the capability for a calendar application to effectively open a backdoor using JavaScript and receive commands using Unicode. Matt, I'm definitely going to pass it to you to correct me on some of that.
Right, you're good.
So we get the case, we start to work it, we get capture data, and we start kind of leaning on the OCR a little bit. And then we see that there's a reference to an article by a public company. And we take a peek at that article that was detailing the effects of this calendar application. And we came to realize a lot of it ended up being hypothetical, almost like a proof of concept. And so Matt was actually able to decrypt some of the payload information. Was it? No, we were able to review the JSON, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so we were able to see it's not, yes, it can receive bad instructions, but it's not. And here's the proof of what it's not doing. Now, we did find things that were not in that article, and effectively it wanted to change all of your Chrome settings to clickjack the user. So anything you clicked on would just go to strange website.xyz. But that was a fun, interesting one that kind of required collaboration within CIS a little bit broader. Matt, do you want to fix any of the errors I made?
No, there's not
statement?
Enough time for that. No, you hit it, Dustin. Yeah, like I think that's also a good example, right? Like just, you know, for folks that have had the great fortune not to work incident response case or need incident response, where, you know, things kind of evolve and your mindset or what you think going into it is not necessarily what's going to be on the tail end of the case. Sometimes it is that way. It's like cut and dry, but other times it's not. Dustin hit it pretty well. Yeah.
That's awesome. And again, having to go through I think it's so interesting. It's fascinating. It's also like puzzle solving as well. When you're putting all of these different pieces together and looking at that execution and how it's, it could be used in this way, but now here's a nefarious way. Here's the, you know, putting on the red team hat and seeing what it's actually doing. That's really cool. I mean, super. Just really a great example, again, of how you come together. And I think it's also another interesting point. Matt, you'd mentioned it before, you know, working with the SOC. And I think the CERT itself with our SOC, our threat intelligence groups, I think it's an ecosystem, really, of just inter-collaboration. And in some cases, we see and correct me if I'm wrong, but SOC analysts moving into CERT as well. I think, again, another good element of training, as you mentioned, from a skill set differentiation perspective, it's great to get, you know, skills from different areas of information technology that are then contributive to the CERT space. Does that align, Matt, with both the team dynamic across the organization as well as looking at some of the pedigree of those coming into CERT? It always helps to have fresh ideas and fresh skills.
No, yeah, I think you brought up a couple of good points, because I know it's a conversation Dustin and I have had before, but I think all of us, you know, the wanting to solve a puzzle, right? Where you have the what has occurred already, and then your job is not to move forward. Well, it is to move forward, but first you need to work backwards, right? So you kind of have your point of impact, and then that's definitely like a different way to look at things. And I think all of us to some extent, like I know me personally, like I love puzzles, like crossword puzzles, Sudoku, things like that. Just like solving puzzles is exciting. And I think that's one thing when we're assessing talent, coming into the team, first and foremost, are you a mission-driven individual? Are you a team player? But I think the next thing is certainly like there's a technical baseline that we look for of like, have you ever heard of like a Windows registry log, or have you ever heard of a registry hive, things like that? And have you experienced that before? But I think what's really important is, can you kind of dig yourself out of the weeds almost? 'Cause like when you're looking through the MFT or you're scrolling through a security log, it's like, well, you can do that for hours and hours and hours, but as an investigator, right, and Rob talks about this a lot from his own law enforcement experience, right, is like having the investigator mindset is really important, because it's like, what are we really trying to do here? You have a lot of different evidence available, hopefully, in the best cases we have a lot of evidence. Oftentimes we don't have the best evidence available to us, unfortunately. But when we do have it, it's like you have a lot of things to look at, and you could be the most skilled technical person in the history of the world, and if you don't have the mindset of like, okay, like what, let me like pull out a little bit, let me, you know, get up to the 30,000 foot view and like, what is it we're trying to see here? You're just going to get lost, you know, in the data. Right. So that's definitely one thing we try to assess, like, how do you approach solving a problem? Because I think, you know, one thing we find in incident response, like any sort of forensic profession, right, is one thing you want is corroboration. So I think one way you could find evidence of execution, like you could look at a few traditional artifacts like the shim cache, or you could go look at like the SRUM, the SRUM database, right? Like there's just multiple ways to do something. And so when we're looking at candidates for the position, it's like, well, it's not necessarily like there certainly are things where there are right and wrong answers, but it's also like, what are we trying to prove here? So if I'm trying to prove execution, how do you go about thinking of how to do that? Because there's more than one way to do it. And in the course of investigation, right? I was kind of joking about before, right? But we often don't have like a full like swath of data that we get from the partners. It can be very limited, or it can be sometimes on like legacy operating systems, and so we have to be creative. And sometimes it's like, and I'm not trying to say that we're not going to like invent anything. It was like, oh well, this definitely happened. Like if it's not there, it's not there. That's one of the beauties of forensics. Is like it. If the evidence is either there or it's not, we don't when we report things to our partners, like if we're making assumptions, we make that very clear, but we deal in facts and what exists. But when you're looking at people internal to CIS or external that are trying to look in, right, it's about like, you know, can you get out of the, you know, the nitty-gritty, and can you be an investigator? Can you kind of drive the direction you're looking at of like, okay, if I'm looking for execution, why am I looking for execution? What am I trying to prove here in the scope of this case? things like that. So like it's a hard position because it's not something your first day in the cybersecurity industry that I think you can really effectively walk into, because there's a lot of context that's needed to, you know, so for us, we deal a lot with like Windows Enterprise networks. And, you know, if you've not been in that environment before, you've not, you know, done incident response, done system administration, kind of understand how a Windows environment works, right? You could see things that are popping up in forensic tooling or anything like that. And you're like, oh, that might be the end of the world that this thing is happening. But it turns out that's just something that's like native to Windows. And so like having that, you need to have the context, you need to have the technical context. And it's not necessarily like you need to be able to fully reverse engineer every malware sample that comes across your desk, or you need to be able to tell me X, Y, or Z. That is important, but it's also like, I think for cert analysts, like contextualizing what we're looking at, not just for us, but especially for our partners who aren't always technical, like our audience isn't always like super technical. And so being able to convey, you know, why this is important in the broad scope of the investigation is also really important. So I that was kind of a long-winded way of answering your question, but I think when we're you know, assessing talent, internal, external, and I think for our SOC, you know, currently our current team lineup, we don't have anybody that has come from the SOC, but historically we have had SOC analysts that have moved over to the team. And the one of the benefits, right, for our SOC analysts or people that understand SLTTs, right, you kind of, if you're a SOC analyst and you're triaging alerts day in, day out from an SLTT network, you kind of like, okay, I can see what SLTTs are experiencing on the daily basis. And when I'm looking at an investigation, being like, okay, this might be common to SLTT. I kind of recognize this as I'm looking through something forensically. So I think just having like it might be like good news or it might be bad news depending on who you tell to, is like there is certainly a technical level that you need to be at within cyber, but also it's not just that. It's like if you're inquisitive, you have a curious mind, you want to find the answer, solve the puzzle, that does a lot for you.
Definitely. But it's the right mindset, right? And I think it's, you know, one of the things I've always used in the past, and, you know, we'll end on this, but is, you know, you hire for attitude and you'll train for skill, right? As long as that attitude's there, the inquisitive, the right mindset, I think the way you put it, Matt, is perfect. And I think that aligns to what we've seen, and obviously to you both. I mean, just it's been a privilege to get to talk to two of the best in this space, and I really appreciate it. So Matt, Dustin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean.
You got it. And thank you to our audience. We appreciate you listening in. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast at cisecurity.org. Drop us a line and make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways with your preferred podcast provider for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.